In the recent election, Republicans captured 5 Southern Senate seats that had long been held by Democrats. One of them belonged to John Breaux of Louisiana. After 18 years in the Senate and 14 years before that in the House, Breaux is retiring. Amid the increased partisanship on Capitol Hill, Breaux was a centrist who could cut deals and forge alliances by glad-handing on both sides of the aisle. One story in particular sums up his tenure. President Reagan was pressuring Breaux to support a package of spending cuts. The Louisiana senator was willing, but he wanted to protect sugar growers back home. When Breaux was accused of selling his vote, he replied that his vote can't be bought, but it can be rented.
That'll probably be on my tombstone. Being from Louisiana, that was a very common phrase back home. There was an old state senator who used to say that all the time. You can't buy my vote, but by golly, you can rent it. And what he was trying to convey was that, look, you know, if we work together on some things, some things that I need, and this is something that you need, and as long as we can agree on the politics of it and the propriety of what we're trying to accomplish, we ought to make a legitimate exchange. And in Louisiana, it didn't create much excitement at all because people had heard that phrase used by other people all the time, and New York Times ran editorials about how bad it was. It was very positive back in the state of Louisiana.
It's a wonderful story, but it also is a snapshot of time there, a time when you could work both sides of the aisle. And I'm wondering if that's possible now. The president has said he wants to reach out to Democrats. Can Democrats reach out to the Republicans without alienating their base at a time where there's among dyed-in-the-wool Democrats, there's so much disdain and distrust for the current administration?
When I first came to Congress back in 1972, I mean, Tip O'Neill was the Speaker of the House, and Bob Michael was the Republican leader. Now, they didn't agree on hardly anything politically, but they traveled together, they played golf together, they drank together, they talked, they had conversations, they worked with each other for a common good. And then later on, you saw a system whereby the leaders didn't even talk. I mean, Dick Gephardt and Newt Gingrich arguably didn't speak to each other much in a 2-year period. Tip O'Neill and Bob Michael would probably talk more in one day than they did in 1 year. But now, for the first time, you see a Republican leader campaigning against a Democratic leader. When I first got to Congress, that would have been unheard of.
You mentioned a majority leader actually campaigning against the minority leader. You're speaking there of Senator Frist actually traveling to South Dakota to campaign against Senator Tom Daschle. It must have been hard for you to see your friend and colleague, Senator Daschle, lose that seat.
Yeah, well, I'm good friends with both of them, and I'll just point out that we didn't do that type of personal campaigning against each other, against incumbents, particularly when the two leaders have to work with each other every day. How do you campaign against someone in their own state and then the next day come back and act like it never happened? Let's sit down and work out this difficult Medicare problem or Social Security problem. So I think that's changed. And I think that, you know, a lot of times in the caucuses, we don't interact enough. I mean, on Tuesdays, Democrats have our caucus lunch, and we generally outline a program and try to figure out how, you know, we can blame the Republicans for not agreeing with what we think is right. But right across the hall, the Republicans are doing the same thing. They bring in their consultants, and they listen to themselves, and they conclude that they are correct. And it's easy to conclude that you're correct if you never hear the other side.
Just one last question about Senator Frist's decision to actually campaign against Tom Daschle. If these are the rules, what does that say about the Democrats? Should they engage in that kind of power politics? Should Democrats actually be traveling to Tennessee to campaign against Senator Frist?
Well, I would hope not. I mean, I think we could set an example that you know, there's some things more important than just winning an election, and it's dealing with people on a personal day-to-day basis, and friendships are important, and it should supersede politics. So I would hope that, you know, we don't say, well, you did it to us, by golly, we're going to do it to you. It's a never-ending cycle. It has to be stopped.
The Republicans have taken over Senate seats in 5 southern states, including your seat. And as you look forward and as you look at the map, it seems like you're going to need a candidate and a party that can figure out how to really rock the red states to actually have some presence in the South. And what is it going to take to do that?
Well, first of all, you don't have to be from the South to speak Southern. I mean, you can have someone from somewhere else but talks about the values and the concerns down there. And I think, you know, if they can portray themselves as a moderate, mainstream, middle-of-the-road type of person that wants to make government work, I think they can be successful.
There's a lot of talk that you might be considered for a position in the Bush administration, as these vacancies might pop up. Have you had any discussions about this?
Well, we did 4 years ago out of Austin with President-elect George Bush, and at that time it was really interesting. The Senate was 50-50, and if I had left the Senate to accept a cabinet position at that time, I would have changed the makeup of the Senate. I wasn't about to get into that, so I said I wasn't interested. I'm obviously not going to be in the Senate any longer come January, but I really don't think I want to do a cabinet. And I want to make it clear, no one's called me up and said, would you be Secretary of State or anything else? And that's not going to happen, I don't think. But I think that I'm willing to help. If there's a commission out there that I feel like, I mean, they feel like I could be helpful with in bringing people to the table and helping putting together some ideas, whether it's Social Security or tax reform, I'm certainly willing to try and help if I can.
So if you're not interested in serving in the Bush administration, what are your plans?
Oh, boy, I tell you, I wish I had a clear answer. I want to stay involved. We're going to stay in the Washington area. My family's here. My grandchildren are here, 3 grandchildren now. And we're going to stay in this area. But I'm also going to be tied to Louisiana, working at LSU in a school of communications, mass communications. And I want to be involved in healthcare. I have to make a living. I'll probably maybe associate with a law firm, serve on a few boards. You know, when they say retire, I mean, I'm retiring from this job, but I mean, I plan to be active or even more active than I was before. And I think that's important. I mean, you need, I can't go sit on a porch and rock. I mean, I'd fall off and break my leg or something. I mean, I got to really be active. I got to get up in the morning and have someplace to go.
So who's going to host the annual Mardi Gras party?
That's a problem. I'm going to do it one more year, but I mean, this is sort of a tradition I've been doing for so long. I've been going to the Washington Mardi Gras festivities for over 30 years and wearing crazy costumes that people outside Louisiana never understand. It's something that's uniquely Louisiana. It's a lot of fun, and it's good to let your hair down.
Well, especially in a city where a lot of people take themselves very seriously. They need Mardi Gras here.
You know, Washington almost needs Mardi Gras.
More than once a year. Senator Breaux, thanks so much for coming in to talk to us.
Thank you, Michelle.
Senator John Breaux, Democrat from Louisiana. After 32 years, he's leaving Capitol Hill.